Hey guys, welcome to episode 3 of the OCDstories.com podcast. In today's episode, I have Caitlin Nicole. Caitlin is quite a big YouTuber now in the OCD space. Her videos are brilliant. She puts a lot of thought into them. She helps a lot of people. I'm sure quite a few of you know of her. She also wrote her story recently for the OCDstories.com. There'll be a link in the show notes so you can check that out. She's only 19. She's unbelievably knowledgeable for her age. She knows a lot. It was great to talk with her. She shares many great tips around accepting thoughts, around religious OCD, around harm OCD, and dealing with intrusive thoughts. Everyone of all ages should be able to get something from her. Also, if you're kind of at that high school, college age, hopefully you'll be able to really relate to her and take a lot of advice off her. I hope you enjoy. So my guest today is Kat Nicole. Kat is a student with a passion for helping people who have OCD. She does so for her YouTube channel, WordPress blog, and various social media outlets. It is her dream to raise awareness of mental illness through public speaking and to publish a book or two. She's currently studying psychology so she can someday directly help those who suffer from mental illness. Welcome to the OCD Stories podcast, Kat.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, it's a pleasure to have you on. As we were talking before, you know, I saw your YouTube stuff probably a few months ago now, but I found it really inspiring how honest you were and just direct. I think that's really needed. It's a pleasure to have you on. If you could start by, I guess, just going into your OCD story, you know, where it started and kind of the progression of it.
Okay, so I've had anxiety like all of my life, but it wasn't until I was 15 when I started getting severe OCD symptoms. And it was really scary because it was mostly harm thoughts. And of course, I had never thought of OCD as something that gives you intrusive thoughts. I had always thought of it as like a cleaning disorder where people like to clean and organize. And so having these harm thoughts, I never would have guessed it was OCD. And when I got diagnosed, it was really a relief time. I didn't get that much help because when I went to a very general inpatient program, so they didn't really know how to deal with OCD. So they basically just told me you need to learn to distract and cope with it and distract yourself and stuff like that. And then for the next like 6 months, I only got worse. I also went on medication, but I really don't think it helped that much back then. But for the next 6 months, it only got worse. And then when I went to an OCD program, an intensive outpatient program for OCD at the same hospital, that's when I really started recovery and I learned exposure and response prevention, and I learned how to accept my thoughts the way that they were and just move on with my day and do what I need to do despite them.
Okay,
and of course,
sorry, go on.
I wanted to mention that after the harm thoughts, and then my OCD got into scrupulosity, which was really, really a tough time. That was when my OCD got really, really bad in those 6 months. And then they moved on to sexual obsessions, which are currently what I'm struggling with probably the most.
Yeah.
But the scrupulosity and the sexual obsessions are still with me today. But the harm thoughts are kind of in the past. So.
Oh, brilliant. there's often this thing, Mark Freeman actually calls it the air mattress effect. So, you know, you squash the harm OCD, but the OCD then just inflates into another area. Yeah. I mean, it's good that you've beaten harm OCD. So when you were hospitalized the first time, did they acknowledge that it was OCD, or were they not sure what it was?
I think it's really hard to remember, but I think it was just a couple days later that I got the diagnosis of OCD. I had a really good doctor there, and I know that some people, and this, it really makes me sad when I hear this, but I know that some people like don't get diagnosed until like 14 years after they first start getting severe symptoms. And it's just, I feel very blessed that I was able to get diagnosed so fast in just a couple of months. And then I was able to get treatment only like 6 months later. But, yeah, I had a really good doctor there, and she diagnosed me with OCD pretty much right away. So,
cool. Oh, that is really good.
Yeah,
most stories I hear, and I'm sure you hear as well for your channel, people just go for years and decades without getting a decent diagnosis.
Yeah.
Cool. No, that's really good. So we're gonna kind of delve into that story throughout this. So I'm intrigued to know, because we haven't really touched too much on intrusive thoughts yet on the podcast. Was there anything you did that made your intrusive thoughts worse, or that you maybe still do?
That made it worse. Do you mean it like started them, or is
Oh,
that
no.
just.
So, yeah, just so we'd say the sexual obsessions, is there anything you currently do, like check it, reassurance checking or anything like that, that yeah, just makes it worse? And
There definitely is some stuff that I do. A lot of my compulsions, even from the very beginning, were just around avoidance. I would avoid my thoughts, and I would avoid things that triggered me. So that's probably my main like compulsion. And then I also sometimes I'll look for reassurance through like the internet or through just checking my own body and my own thoughts, seeing like, do I like this thought? Do I not like this thought? And stuff like that. I used to do that an awful lot with the harm thoughts, but now that I know exposure and response prevention, I do try to just accept the thought and move on instead of doing those things. But sometimes I do get caught up in it.
it's easy to buy into it, isn't it, at times? Okay, that's really good. On that then, is there anything you do to distinguish yourself from the thoughts? Because sometimes, obviously, when we suffer from OCD, we really latch onto the thought, and we believe the thought is true. When you suddenly realize that, is there anything you do, any techniques to kind of pull yourself away from the thought?
I definitely like saying thought is just a thought. I usually bring up those sort of analogies that remind me that a thought is literally just a biochemical production of the brain, and it means nothing about my character or who I am. My psychologist likes to make the analogy that intrusive thoughts are like dreams. So thoughts and dreams alike are both things that can pop up randomly and make string be strung together in our brains to make stories, except one happens when we're awake and one happens when we're asleep. And I like to bring up that analogy to myself and just kind of remind myself, thoughts are just thoughts. They literally mean nothing.
No, that's a really good analogy, actually. I might steal that. Okay, cool. So is there, what do you do then to kind of actually we probably, yeah, we touched, I was gonna say, what do we do to make intrusive thoughts better, but you've touched on that. So I was reading your WordPress blog the other day, which is really good. Is it doinexposure.wordpress.com? Cool. Yeah, I encourage everyone to check it out. So you were talking about a script exposure you did around sexual obsessions. I just wonder if you could explain that for anyone listening, and how it helped, if it has helped you.
So a script exposure is essentially an exposure where you write down a worst case scenario of something that could happen. And so I basically what I did for that exposure was I just wrote down me like having an affair with someone, and it was the first time I'd ever done something like that, and it was pretty hard the first time, but then the more I do it, the easier it gets. And it was really hard to actually write it out with someone else, because a lot of my OCD things that have hindered my treatment is just embarrassment because of the thoughts. But it ended up okay, and my psychologist is so supportive, and she really helped me through it and guided me through it. But a script exposure is essentially just writing down a worst case scenario. It can be of anything. It can be of a sexual intrusive thought, a harm thought, like it can be of you catching AIDS or something like that. And it's hard, it's tough, but I think it's sometimes it's more what's the word? Like better to do than an in vivo exposure, because those can get kind of complicated with certain thoughts like harm thoughts and stuff like that. Like you can't actually stab your family, but you can write about
That
it.
is true. No, that's really good. So that's had a positive impact on you. Do you find it sort of the thoughts getting less, or the anxiety?
Yeah, I definitely do. It's definitely helped with like getting when I get intrusive thoughts, it's helped me to sort of be less anxious when I do get them. And like an exposure that I'm doing now, which is kind of a script exposure but a little different, where I've been doing this the past couple of weeks, where I write down my intrusive thoughts while looking at a trigger, and then I will send it to my psychologist to sort of work on the embarrassment factor, as well as getting me used to, like, talking about my thoughts.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that that has been really helpful, because each time I look at the trigger, I get less intrusive thoughts, and my anxiety gets lower each time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely worked to decrease thoughts and decrease anxiety around them when I do get them.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Do you have you recorded it at all? So read the script and then played it back to yourself on loop?
Yes, I have done that before.
Cool. How did that work at all?
That worked pretty well, actually. That sometimes I feel like works better than reading it, or sometimes I'll do a combination of both, because I have a lot of trouble with staying focused, because I often, like, my mind wanders really easily.
Yeah.
So reading it and listening to it can help me stay focused.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I did the I've done script exposure before around relationship OCD, because you said it's hard to do for things like that and harm OCD, and writing it down was one of the hardest things I ever did, because you're writing down your biggest fears, and it's almost, for me, it was the magical thinking that if I write it down, I'm encouraging it to come true, and then recording it's even worse, and then, but yeah, as you listen to it, it does get better, right?
Yeah, part of my treatment was really realizing that just because you say something, it doesn't mean it's going to come true. Now I'll like purposely say stuff that makes me anxious, because I know, like, it's not going to come true. It kind of, like, gets back at OCD a little bit. If I think, like, oh, I'm such a bad person, I'm just like, I'm a horrible person.
Yeah.
And then I can laugh about it afterwards. Yeah. And
yeah, that's really good. Sort of exaggerate it and blow it out of proportion and, yeah, scare OCD. Okay, great. So in one of your articles, you talked about how Puro led to other forms of OCD. I just wonder if you could explain that a bit, or how you thought it happened, or why.
Well, my OCD kind of started, I it wasn't a big event, but I kind of went back to needing to know God's will for my life.
Yeah.
And then after that, I started sort of putting a lot of emphasis on my thoughts, and that led into the harm OCD, which led me to get diagnosed. And then that thought of needing to know God's will led into, like, the scrupulosity portion of my OCD. So I kind of feel like the Pure O, it's sort of, as that dwindled down, it sort of branched into the scrupulosity, and then some of my harm thoughts would also be, like, scrupulosity thoughts. Like, I'd have intrusive thoughts about religious figures harming me, or me harming them, and stuff like that.
Yeah. You just merged. Okay, yeah. Great. So with praying and stuff like that, do you still struggle with that, or have you beat that?
With praying, I still do struggle a little bit, but it's definitely not as bad as it used to be. But
yeah,
I do sometimes repeat prayers if they don't feel right, or if they feel like, if OCD tells me something bad during them, I'll feel like I have to repeat them. But just the other day, I actually OCD was really bugging me, so I was just like, I'm just going to say this one prayer, I'm going to stop. And then I was really proud of myself for doing that. But yeah, it definitely still bothers me a little bit, but it's something that's definitely manageable now.
Yeah, okay, that's really good. Are there any, because it shows what you did, I mean, that's really good that, you know, you said, I'm just going to do it this once, and I'm going to stop and, you know, live with the anxiety and the thoughts. Is there any tips you have for kind of, I mean, obviously you can say to yourself, just do it, but sometimes that's really hard to just discipline yourself. Are there any strategies you have around praying or any type of religious OCD?
Definitely setting a goal is helpful.
Yeah.
And, like, saying it out loud, or saying it in your head, just saying, I'm going to do this once. Yeah. And just doing things like, so I wear my scarf when I pray, my headscarf. And sometimes a way for me to distinguish the end of the prayer is just to take off my scarf, because then I can't pray anymore.
Yeah.
Because that's in my faith that a woman prays with her head covered. And so doing, like, a physical action, like, this is over, has helped me. And, like, starting to eat, because I usually pray before I eat. So just starting, picking up my spoon and starting to eat, and just focusing on that while living with the anxiety has been helpful.
Okay, now that's great advice. I really love the goal part. I think yeah, that would help a lot of people. Cool. So with ERP, did you have any physical compulsions at all at any point with OCD?
Probably I don't have that many physical compulsions, but I do have this. It's hard to explain, but I had a compulsion where I have to choose the, well, yeah, I have to choose the right item. So the physical aspect of that is that if I pick out an item, then I'd have to put it back if it's wrong, and I'd have to pick out another one. I'd have to keep choosing items, looking at them, and seeing which one feels right to me. And OCD would never give me a clear amount of times I had to do it or a clear distinction. Sometimes it would give me a clear distinction, but it usually wouldn't. And so I'd have to keep looking at each one, being like, does this one feel right or does this one feel right? So it's kind of a mix of like looking for the right thing and also like just right kind of feeling, looking for that just right feeling. So yeah, that was difficult. And then I remember one of my sexual obsessions had to do with my hand, and I would have to do this whenever I got it until like the feeling went away, because it had like a sort of feeling that went along with it. And that was one that I had trouble stopping, but nowadays it's really easy to resist, and I'm really happy about that. But yeah, those were really my main physical compulsions.
Okay, brilliant. And did you use ERP to remove those?
Yes, I worked on the choosing one a lot in the intensive outpatient program, because that was probably my biggest one at the time. And so I use a lot of ERP with that.
Okay. And was there a way you kind of built up to it, or did you break it down into stages?
I started by choosing, I think it was like a snack from the snack closet, and I would choose it for myself, so that was kind of easier. And then at first I wouldn't eat it, I would just choose it. And then I started eating it, and then I started choosing it for other people, which would bring them into the picture, and I'd be accountable for them if they were to die or go to hell or whatever the consequence was. So then I started choosing cups for people and choosing pens for myself, and I started with choosing like two different items, and then I started with choosing two different objects of like the same item, like two bags of Doritos or whatever. So yeah, I really worked up with that one into doing it harder and harder each time. So.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, so in one of your blog posts, you wrote sort of, is it four? Yeah, four words. Well, maybe it is. I really like that. I've used similar things to that before. I'm just kind of intrigued because acceptance commitment therapy is something that I strongly believe in, and this somewhat falls along those lines of just accepting it, and then that's a statement to accept the OCD. Sort of how when you use that, does it work always? Does it work sometimes? Are there any sort of sticking points with it using a phrase like that for acceptance?
It usually works for me. I feel like a lot of times I have trouble just accepting a thought as it comes in my brain. So it helps me to kind of say something to, or else, because if I don't say something, then I'll immediately try to distract or something. So just saying, if OCD says, oh, maybe you're going to catch a bug by touching that, I'll just say, well, maybe I will, and then I'll do it anyway. And it's kind of, so I do think it has a lot of, it relates to acceptance and commitment therapy. And I've never actually done it, but I've heard about it through Mark's videos, and I think it's a really great therapy. I'd love to like learn more about it, but I suggest it to people on my videos sometimes, because a lot of people ask for me for help, and I'm always like, do ERP and do ACT if you can. And yeah.
Okay, brilliant. All right. I got some PDFs I can send you actually on ACT that might help your learning more. Cool. So you also talked about finding it difficult to open up to your therapist about sexual obsessions. I mean, rightly so. I'm sure we'd all struggle with that. I guess, as you said, that was really hard for you. But is there any advice you have for anyone listening who currently is ashamed to tell anyone about, I guess, any form of OCD, but let's focus on sexual obsessions, sort of how you went about it, any advice you have for them to, I guess, swallow the pill and just do it?
Yeah, I'd definitely say talk. If you're talking to someone you trust, they're not going to judge you. Especially a therapist, they're literally like trained not to judge people.
Yeah.
So
they're if paid you're talking not to, a therapist,
yeah, pretty much. So if you're talking to a therapist, they've probably heard it before also, and they're not going to judge you. And like that's what my therapist, my psychologist, always used to say to me. I've heard it all before. You cannot tell me something I haven't heard before. I work with kids with OCD all the time, and. So that's definitely something that I would tell those people who are struggling, that they're not going to judge you. And also that once you do say it out loud, it's anxiety provoking, but it's also kind of like a weight off your shoulders. It's like telling a huge secret. And I know I started before I told them to someone, I wrote them down, and writing them down was a huge step for me to kind of separate them from outside of my mind, and it also helped me feel more like a weight's been lifted off my shoulders, feel more of a relief, like this is coming out of my mind, this isn't like as crazy as it sounds when I'm originally thinking it. And so I definitely suggest, if it's too hard to talk to someone right away, write it down, and maybe even like write it down and then give it to someone. And then eventually work up to telling someone, because I feel like that's a huge step to breaking free from the thoughts, is just telling someone. Because OCD wants us to be embarrassed and ashamed, and it wants us to live in fear and live in fear of judgment of other people. So telling someone is a way to beat back OCD and say, I'm in charge here. I'm going to do what I want, and I want to get better, so I'm going to talk about my thoughts.
Yeah, that's some really good advice there. As you said, it kind of wants us to be alone and not share it. And as soon as you do share it, as I'm sure you felt, like it's a weight lifted off your shoulders. And I find whenever I've done it, it helps me instantly distance myself in that moment and see, it was OCD all along, because this person's now saying that's not normal. That's not in a bad way, but that's not you. That's the thought. Okay, cool. That's fantastic. I'm intrigued to find out how all sort of your faith has helped you with OCD. I saw in one of your videos. I was just curious if you wanted to share that.
Okay. Sorry, my mouth's a little dry. Good. All right. So my faith has definitely helped me throughout the OCD, even though the OCD was very entwined in my faith for a long time. It was very entwined into my faith. But once I was able to separate it more, I really started to look back and see how my faith had helped me throughout it all, and how like God or higher power had been helping me. I mean, I truly believe that if I hadn't been praying all that time, maybe God wouldn't have heard my prayers, and he wouldn't have led me to this help that I had. Because as soon as I started getting the harm thoughts, I was like, God, please take these thoughts away from me, because they were that distressing. And I always like to say that whenever I was praying for, praying because I thought I had sinned, I think that God knew I was really praying for deliverance. And I feel like reading my Bible and doing things like that, kind of talking to people who have a strong faith like I do, has really encouraged me and helped me throughout all of the process. And nowadays, I just feel very grateful that I'm able to use my experience to help others. And I feel like everyone has a purpose in life. And I'm thinking that, I don't know, maybe my purpose was to struggle with that so I can now help others, something like that.
Yeah.
And that really encourages me too, especially on hard days. It's like, you know, this is really bothering me, but I'm going to use it to help other people someday. So things like that have really encouraged me throughout the day and throughout the whole time with my faith and stuff.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, that's really good. And obviously Jesus went through a lot of pain himself on the cross, but the Bible teaches, whoever reads it, that obviously he suffered and he died for everyone else. And I guess that's somewhat what you were saying there, is, you know, you're taking that short-term pain so you can help people in the long run, which is a great message. Okay, cool. Actually, on that, the church, or it's a synagogue, because is it Judaism, Christian? Did I say that right?
Either.
Yeah.
It can really be either for me, being a Messianic Jew / Hebraic Christian sort of thing. So,
okay. Has the church or synagogue, are they active in sort of your mental health recovery, or do they know about it?
Well, I haven't told my new synagogue / church yet, because I feel like I'm setting a bad example with this, but I've been kind of nervous about their judgment and their reaction. Because, you know, with Christians, you never know how they're, or Jews, like Messianic Jews, you never know how they're going to react. They could be the type of people who are going to say, like, oh, well, you need to pray more, you need to have more faith.
Yeah.
And I hate it when people say that, because, like, you can have all of the faith in the world and you can still have these thoughts, you can still have OCD.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of stigma and misconceptions in the church. So I've been holding off on telling them, and although they do ask me why I'm pursuing psychology, and I think the next time someone asks me that, I'm going to bring it up. And, but I did, I never went to a church when because I recently moved down here to, the southern United States, but I used to live in New England. Yeah. And I never went to church up there because I felt like, well, the OCD kind of stopped me, and I felt like the church wasn't really challenging me. Like, I wanted to hear more stimulating stuff. So my dad's church, I didn't really want to go to. But his reverend was always there to help me, and his people from his church were always, like, helping me out and kind of encouraging me when I needed it and when I did go. And I also had a lot of, like my aunt is very full of faith and stuff like that, so I would talk to her a lot. And and then I also had, this is a little weird, but I had Jehovah's Witness friends. Because I had a really close friend in middle school and elementary school who actually was a Jehovah's Witness. And one day she came to our door, and we invited her in. And so we started learning with them, and they also helped me along. They would visit me on Saturdays when they would make their rounds around my neighborhood, and we would always invite them and have fruit with them and stuff. So people like that, just, it wasn't really a church that was helping me out, but little people along the way would encourage me and would be there for me. And I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah. Okay, now thanks for sharing that. I mean, I understand your reasoning for not wanting to necessarily open up at the minute, but I guess a bit of, I don't know, don't necessarily take my advice, take it with a pinch of salt. But if you do open up and they do say things like, you know, you need to have more faith or you need to pray more, know that that's potentially a closed-minded church, and it's a sign that, you know, they've shown you their true colors, and you should look elsewhere for a more enlightened church community. So I guess have that perspective when you do it. And
thank you for that. That's actually a good point.
No worries. Cool. So what's next on the list? Do your friends know, because obviously you're 19, you know, you have a lot of friends around you at university, or from high school still, do they know you have OCD? And if they do, are they understanding, supportive?
So it's kind of complicated because I don't have that many close friends. When I first got OCD, I kind of distanced myself from all of my close friends.
Yeah.
So I don't have that many close friends that I know in person.
Yeah.
But for a long time, I kept my OCD a secret. I would mention it a little bit, like, in passing. I would mention, like, I have anxiety and OCD, and they'd just be like, oh, okay. But I think it was last year. No, it was this year. Earlier this year, I posted a status on Facebook about my OCD because I was really making progress on the vlogs, on my channel, talking about it. And I felt like it's time to let them know in case they're struggling with OCD.
Yeah.
Or they're struggling with mental illness and they need help. So I posted a status on it about how, because that day I'd been to the reunion for my OCD program, and I posted a status, very inspired by that. I posted a status about how people can grow and people can recover from mental illness or any challenge they have. Yeah. I told them about my struggles with OCD, how I'd been hospitalized, how I'd been in the OCD program, and how much I changed as a person, how much it helped me to recover, and how much seeing the other kids there who once like would not touch a doorknob if their life depended on it, and now they're holding the handrails walking up the stairs. I'm like,
yeah.
It just felt so inspiring to see them recovered. Mm-hmm. And so I posted that status, and then I got so many responses, as I didn't know if I was going to get a response or anything, but I got so many responses from people being like, we support you, Kat. It's lovely to know you and stuff like that. And now I've been posting my videos a lot, and I've been posting my blog, and I feel like I feel like they're very accepting of it. And I remember I posted my article that I wrote for the OCD stories, and one of my dad's friends commented, and she said, I can't wait to read your book and follow your blog, Kat. And I was like, that's really great that I can reach her and she can appreciate what I'm writing. Even if she doesn't have OCD, she supports me, and that feels really great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's brilliant. I found that as well. Like, you know, it's tough opening up, right? And when you do, I don't think I've had one bad thing said to me. Everyone has been, as you said, like really supportive, inspired as well, that, you know, you and I can be, and everyone else can be so honest, because we live in a world where there is stigma and people won't open up. So when they see people opening up, they respect, you know, your bravery. A lot of people don't necessarily, especially those who don't suffer from mental health issues, they don't necessarily have the bravery to open up and talk about, you know, their true feelings, because everyone has problems, right? So I think that's liberating for them as well.
I get some comments on some videos just saying like, wow, you're so brave. And I just think, I wish that it wasn't seen as brave to talk about my problems. I wish that more people would be open and honest. Because, like, people say how, like, Facebook makes people depressed because everyone's posting the good side of their life.
Yeah.
And everyone's posting, like, the happy times. But I feel like if more people talked about the sad times, then less people would be sad. Yeah. Less people would think that everyone has it together except for me, you know? I feel like I wish that this could be a world where we could talk about our issues and problems and get sympathy and get help and have more understanding people in the world. But I know, like you said, like, no one's been mean to me. And I feel like a lot of times the stigma that's holding people back is that, they think everyone's going to be mean. Everyone's going to say something bad, say something derogatory towards them. Yeah. But the thing is, most people love you and are gonna say nice things, unless you're telling like this person who hates you. Like, don't tell people who hate you who are gonna use it against you, but tell the people who you love, and they're gonna be understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great advice. I think that's partly why I wanted to keep the OCD stories. I wanted people's pictures there, I wanted their bios. It's fine, like, I will post, I got an article I'm going to post tomorrow, and that's going to be anonymous, going to be the first anonymous one. But I like to try, and if people are confident, or not confident enough, happy enough to share their picture and their bio, because I want to remove that stigma. I want people to say, you know, this is me, and it's fine that I struggle with this. It's, you know, it doesn't define me. And I think by showing our faces more, people will realize actually there's nothing shameful about mental health. It's something that millions of people struggle with,
I think that's really great.
Millions of people struggle with obesity, and we don't hide that. Not that you can hide it. That was a bad joke. Weird question, but what is your, if you had to give one, what would be your number one tip for beating OCD?
The first thing that comes to my mind is accept your thoughts. Accept that they're there, they're gonna be there, they're normal, and change your reactions to the thoughts.
Yeah.
Change, because we can't change our thoughts, we can't get rid of our thoughts. They're just gonna be there no matter what. And the more we try to get rid of them, the more they're gonna stay. So don't change your thoughts, but change your reactions. Change your perceptions of them. Like, CBT, I found, and cognitive restructuring has been so helpful for me with this. Just change how you view them. View them as normal.
Yeah.
view them as just something your brain does and accept them as that. Because, like, as Mark says, everybody has a brain.
Yeah.
And, you know, brains get thoughts. You're going to have thoughts and you can't really do anything about it. So just accept your thoughts. Stop perceiving them as bad, because that's how the OCD starts. That's how the anxiety starts happening around them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's really good. Okay, so what does the future hold for you? We briefly discussed about that in the intro, but if you had any more clarity you wanted to add to that picture.
I don't know. I know what I want for the future, but I really don't know how it's going to end up.
Yeah.
But I'd say what I want to happen is I'd love for my channel to grow more. I'd love to do like a weekly support group on my channel. That's one of my big goals for next year.
Yeah.
If I can get enough people on board with that, I would love to do that. I'd love to write more on my blog because I only recently started that. So I'd like to write more in-depth posts about things that are relevant to my OCD. And I'd love to finish college and get my master's degree and become a therapist. And really, it's my goal. It's my dream to kind of work in a hospital, like a hospital-like setting like I was in when I was receiving treatment for OCD.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's just a wonderful setting that to help other people and just to encourage other people. So I'd love to do something like that eventually, but it's so hard to get a job over here. But especially in like psychology, where pretty much everyone has a psychology degree. No, that's not true. But a lot of people go to school, especially like my dad even did this. He went to school for psychology and ended up in something totally different. I feel like psychology jobs are hard to come by, but I'm going to try. Yeah. Ultimately, a dream of mine would be to make a living off of YouTube, but I know that's totally like out there. It might happen. It might not. I don't know. Some people get lucky. But it's, I'd definitely love to own my own business, do something like that, do something where I can be my own boss. And YouTube is definitely like my dream job, but I also would love to work directly with people and be a therapist, do something like that. Just helping people. I'd love to like get more into my Bible because I know I don't read my Bible nearly as much as I should.
Yeah.
But do stuff like that, things that just would make me happy, things that's going to make me grow as a person, and also hopefully help other people grow.
Okay. So, yeah, no, that's a great vision. With YouTube, you're definitely doing the right things, and it's definitely possible to make a living off YouTube. So, you know, keep going. You've got a perfect time while you're at uni. Obviously, do your studies, but in your free time, work hard on that channel. And also, like what you're saying about, you know, it's hard to go into psychology. It is, but you're doing such a great thing by doing this YouTube channel, by doing your blog. So when you come to get, you know, training on the job or a job as a therapist, you can say, well, I've got X thousand followers on YouTube around anxiety disorders. I've got this blog that has this many. You've instantly put yourself above 95% of the other candidates.
So, yeah, that's true. I never actually thought of that.
Yeah, so keep going at that and you won't have to worry about getting a job. Okay, so are there any kind of tips or words of wisdom around OCD, or it could be life, that we haven't touched on that you want to share with the audience?
Maybe to not be afraid. I think actually we did touch on this a little bit, but just not to be afraid to share your story with people, because sharing your story, that's going to help them in ways that you don't even imagine. Like, I never imagined I would get so many comments and views on my videos where I share my story, but those are probably my most viewed videos, the ones where I share like certain OCD symptoms, like sexual thoughts and harm thoughts. And I get so many people saying their stories in the comments, and so many people saying, you've changed my life, or saying that you saved my life because I didn't know what I was dealing with until now. Yeah. And I think it's definitely important that we share our stories and inspire others. And if we can get an open dialogue about mental health, we can really reduce that stigma around it. And I think I personally think it's a much happier life to live life as an open book, mm-hmm. rather than keeping everything inside, bottling yeah. everything up, and just speaking to your therapist. I think it's much better to just speak to everyone, and you know, because it helps them and it helps you feel more confident and feel more. I just personally feel like I feel better talking about my story. You know, sometimes it's hard, yeah, but the good things in life are hard. Yeah. So
that's a great. I might use that as the title of this. The good things in life are hard. Okay, great. Actually, kind of on what you were saying about kind of being an open book and being vulnerable. I don't know if you saw Brené Brown on TED Talks.
No, I don't think I have.
Okay, cool. She did two talks. I'll put them in the show notes on vulnerability and how everyone needs to be more vulnerable. And actually, when you're vulnerable, that's when you're strongest. It's an interesting talk. But I heard this pastor once say, he said, your mess is your message. And I really like that about using your pain. Okay, cool. So you can have a billboard anywhere in the world. Doesn't matter. What message would you have on it for all to see? Doesn't have to be OCD related. That's a
good question. I was actually thinking about this the other day, and I think I would say the quote from the Bible, "Love your neighbor as yourself," because I feel like that's the thing that's going to make this world happier if everyone's just like nice to each other. Something along those lines, something like love your neighbor, even if he's like gay, even if he's black, even if he's a dinosaur, like love your neighbor because he's your neighbor and you should be kind to him and hopefully he'll be kind to you back and like treat others as you like to be treated, stuff like that. Because I feel like that's the most like important thing that we should share with the world right now is just like love other people because we're all humans on this earth. And we're not going to have any fun if we're all arguing with each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's probably what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that. Obviously, if your neighbor's a Tyrannosaurus Rex, do not love them. Run.
That's true. That's true.
That's a really good message. Okay, cool. So how can people get in touch or how can they find more about you?
You can find me at youtube.com/c/ShalomAlechem and the number one. I usually say my URL instead of the username because there are a lot of people that are called Shalom Aleichem, but they're all Jewish people and don't talk about mental health. But and also you can find me on WordPress at doanexposure.wordpress.com, Tumblr at doanexposure.tumblr.com, Twitter at The Catway, Snapchat is at The Catway, and I think that's it.
Cool. Oh, brilliant. All of that will be in the show notes on the OCDstories.com. So if you guys head there. All right. Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time, Kat. It's been an honor having you on chatting, and you've given some amazing advice, which I know is going to help people. Just keep doing what you're doing with YouTube. You're doing a great job. You're helping people, and it's going to help you massively in your career.
Thank you so much for saying that, and thank you for having me.
That's an absolute pleasure.